Well, hello and welcome back to Archaeology News Weekly. Yes, we're back again. And the main headlines from around the world, I bet you can't wait to hear, are as follows. An Indus Valley site is ravaged by floods. Bronze Age burial mounds are saved in Yorkshire. Tools from the oldest known North Europeans are found in Britain. And a Bronze Age settlement in Cyprus yields rich finds. The skeleton, known as Blodwyn, comes home to Wales. And we report on a new programme in Malta which offers access to little-known sites. Now, the big question. Were Neanderthals muscle men? We'll find out later. And there's excitement at an ancient tomb site being uncovered in Vietnam. Then it's over to the UK again to mix art with archaeology at an exhibition of figurines in Norwich called Unearthed. Finally, we've got more on the Neolithic amputation burial in France. So, before I go any further, I should say that all these stories have been collected from various sources. And to view details in each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. Floods in Haryana state in northern India may have destroyed a piece of ancient Indian history after it was submerged under nearly 10 feet of water from a breach in the Sutlej-Yamuna link canal. The archaeological site is at Jognak Hera, which has copper smelting furnaces that were unearthed along with copper slag dating back nearly 5,000 years and belonging to the Indus Valley civilization. Residents of the area were oblivious to the historical significance of their neighbourhood until some months ago when a team from the State Department of Archaeology began investigating the area, but it was not declared a protected site by the government. The excavated site has been badly ravaged by floods and the ancient furnaces have also been damaged. However, the antiquities themselves that were unearthed from the excavation have been recovered. Two ancient mounds, which may contain the remains of farmers who worked the land 4,000 years ago, have been saved for posterity in Yorkshire. The Bronze Age burial mounds just off the A166, close to the summit of Garraby Hill, were considered at high risk, but have now been protected from the plough after tenant farmer Geoff Ray applied to Natural England's higher level stewardship scheme. Historic Environment Field Advisor Yvonne Luke said that they are very grateful to him for helping to preserve the last resting place of the original farmers who cleared the forest and created the first fields. The mounds were excavated in the 19th century, but could still contain burials and other artefacts and would once have stood several metres high. In a spectacular position on the edge of the wolds and made from gleaming white chalk, they would have been visible for many miles. Three quarters of the ancient scheduled monuments in the East Riding of Yorkshire are considered at risk and are slowly being damaged by ploughing. Pasture is the best option for preserving earthworks and subsurface archaeology. But as we know, this costs money. In a way, it's only a temporary solution because one day, of course, they're going to have to be under the plough again. We can't really place the whole of Britain under pasture. That's just not going to work. So I think we really have to grasp the nettle and think of a way around this, which is a long-term solution rather than the temporary, please don't plough this field. Anyway, personal opinions. Let's go from personal opinions to some amazing discoveries. Spectacular haul of ancient flint tools have been recovered from a beach in Norfolk in England, pushing back the date of the first known human occupation of Britain by up to a quarter of a million years. While digging along the northeast coast of East Anglia, near the village of Happisburgh, archaeologists discovered 78 pieces of razor-sharp flint worked into cutting and piercing tools. The stone tools were unearthed from sediments that are thought to have been laid down either 840 or 950,000 years ago, making them the oldest human artefacts ever found in Britain. The flints were probably left by hunter-gatherers of the human species Homo antecessor, who eked out a living on the floodplains and marshes that bordered an ancient course of the River Thames that has long since dried up. The flints were then washed downriver and came to rest at the Happisburgh site. Chris Stringer, head of human origins at Natural History Museum in London, commented that they are still exceptionally sharp, which suggests they were not moved far from where they were dropped. The population of Britain at the time is most likely numbered in the hundreds, or at most a few thousand. These people probably used the rivers as routes into the landscape. Most of Britain may have been heavily forested at the time, which would have posed a major problem for humans without strong axes to chop the trees down. They lived out in the open, but we don't know if they had basic clothing, were building primitive shelters, or even had the use of fire yet. The discovery overturns a long-held belief that early humans steered clear of chilly Britain and the rest of northern Europe in favour of the more hospitable climate of the Mediterranean. The only human species known to be living in Europe at the time is Homo antecessor, or pioneer man, whose remains were discovered in the Atapuerco hills of Spain in 2008 and have been dated to between 1.1 and 1.2 million years ago. Summer temperatures at Happisburgh were similar to, or slightly warmer than those of today, but winters were probably cooler, at least 3 degrees cooler. The early settlers would have walked into Britain across an ancient land bridge that once divided the North Sea from the Atlantic and connected the country to what is now mainland Europe. The first humans probably arrived during a warm interglacial period, but may have retreated as temperatures plummeted in subsequent ice ages. Until now, the earliest human evidence in Britain comes from Pakefield, near Lowestoft in Suffolk, where a set of stone tools dated to 700,000 years ago were uncovered in 2005. Researchers led by the Natural History Museum and British Museum in London began excavating sites near Happisburgh in 2001 as part of the Ancient Human Occupation of Britain project, and soon discovered tools from the Stone Age between Ice Age deposits. Excavated remains of extinct fossil plants and animals, combined with marine oxygen isotope data on ancient climate shifts, narrowed the timing of hominid visits in Britain to relatively warm periods, either around 840,000 or 950,000 years ago. So far, though, they've found no remains of the ancient people who made them. The research team will continue to investigate the Happisburgh site, hoping to one day find human fossils. They're also trying to find even older sediments to work out when the first humans really arrive. This is cutting-edge stuff. It's brilliant to see a project like the Ancient Human Occupation of Britain project have such a long-term goal and being supported for so long, because it's really paying off now. Excavations of the late Bronze Age settlements at Dromalaxia Visatazi have unearthed a rich array of imported and local bronze and pottery artefacts in Cyprus. The finds at the ancient city witness a central role that Cyprus played during the late Bronze Age. The excavations were carried out in May by the University of Gothenburg in Sweden under the direction of Professor Peter Fischer. The ancient city was inhabited during the late Bronze Age, which dates to around 1600 to 1100 BCE in this area. The city was once as large as 25 hectares, making it also one of the largest ancient cities of the period on the island. This year's excavation exposed only 10 metres square on the site, with 9 rooms uncovered so far. The city itself was built in 2 phases, one in the 13th and 12th century BCE and the other some 100 years earlier. The finds from the partly exposed complex include locally produced and imported pottery and objects of bronze, bone and stone. Dominating amongst the imported pottery are vessels from the Aegean region, mainly from the Greek mainland, but there are also imports from the Levant and Egypt, which include the so-called Canaanite jars, which are a substantial size, 100 litres in fact not being uncommon, and they would once have contained oil and wine. Imports from Anatolia were also found. Sophisticated equipment was used by the excavators and included an advanced geo-radar device. The radar results revealed the outlines of a large compound at least 30 metres square, buried deep under the surface. An excavation for another day. I quite like the idea of 100 litres of wine, but then maybe that's just me. The skeleton of a woman who lived 5,500 years ago has gone on display in her hometown, more than a century after she was discovered. Blodwyn is the nickname given to a Neolithic skeleton found on Little Orme in Llandudno, Conwy County in Wales in 1891. Until now, the remains have been housed at a museum at Bacup in Lancashire. The excavation forms part of a 3-month tomb builders display at Llandudno Museum. The skeleton was discovered in a fissure by an engineer excavating quarry works, who then donated her to the museum in his hometown of Bacup. Carbon dating tests carried out at Oxford University have revealed that Blodwyn died around 3500 BCE, aged somewhere in her late 50s and early 60s. Orthopaedic examination shows that she was 5 foot in height and was very powerfully built, and her bone structure suggests that she was accustomed to carrying heavy loads both on her head and in her arms. There are signs, however, that this lifestyle took its toll, with clear evidence of severe arthritis in her neck and knees, and at the time of her death she was also suffering from secondary cancer, although it's not obvious whether it was this that killed her. She would almost certainly have been an elder of her community, and someone would have been looked up to with a great deal of respect. Above her there was a Bronze Age spearhead, but subsequent radiocarbon tests found that she was actually older than the spearhead and was buried in the Neolithic period. During the Neolithic period, we start to see a crossover from semi-nomadic hunter-gathering society to a more settled pastoral way of life. Some pig bones found with Blodwyn seem to suggest that she was part of this new farming society, and that impression is backed up by isotope tests on her bones, which show that she ate more meat and cultivated crops than fish and wild plants. A fascinating story where you can just see that actually sort of looking into the osteology or the bones of this person are telling us so much more about her life. The Old Temple Study Foundation, a US-based non-profit, has joined with Elder Hostel to provide visitors to Malta access to historic sites ranging from World War II to the oldest standing buildings in the world. Malta, keystone of Mediterranean history, will host the Rhodes Scholar participants. The museum includes several UNESCO World Heritage sites and will offer lectures and field trips. Malta's history goes back over 7,000 years to a fertility cult that built shrines to an earth mother and erected megalithic monuments. Isolated on the island for over 6,000 years, their beliefs survived and evolved. Relics include a functional stone solar calendar and monuments with sophisticated engineering. The full curriculum includes mythology, the Hospitaller Order of the Knights of St. John, the shipwreck of St. Paul, and World War II. The programme is one of total immersion in history. Travellers are housed together and share trips, meals and classes with each other, as well as a full-time escort. Since it began as an Elder Hostel's excursion, it has received very high ratings from the organisation and the qualifications of the presenters. The Old Temples Foundation has long supported education, research and conservation of Maltese historic sites. Investigations of the megalithic culture on Malta have been hampered in the past by a lack of funding and qualified researchers. Perhaps this will help. I'm half tempted to actually go on an Elder Hostel's excursion, though I'm not sure whether I'm elder enough, but I think I would love to go to Malta anyway. An article published in Archaeology, Ethnology and Anthropology in Eurasia describes Neanderthal man as having a level of hormones much higher than is found in modern humans. This would have given them more muscle mass, particularly in the upper extremities. The theory is based upon studies of the fossil humerus, the bone that runs from the shoulder to the elbow. This one was found in Kalinsk in Russia and is thought to have belonged to a Neanderthal male who lived approximately 100,000 years ago. The work was done by Maria Mednikova and her team, and the bone was examined with computerized tomography, X-ray analysis and other tests. It was shown to have an extreme degree of mineralization with unusual thickened walls and a narrow marrow cavity, which would have made the bone very strong. Neanderthals are believed to have had higher blood steroid levels, leading to much more muscular bodies. High steroid levels can also cause demineralization of bone. Medvedkova postulates that the Neanderthal lifestyle contributed to the disproportionate arm strength and argues that Neanderthal men hunted using spears and came into direct physical contact with their prey. This would have given them an evolutionary advantage to those individuals with very strong dominant arms, usually on the right side. Diet and environment also may have contributed to this unique adaptation. Mednikova believes that Neanderthal women, while physically stronger than modern humans, had a more even distribution of muscle mass in their upper body. A diet consisting mostly of animal protein would have also led to this unusual hormone condition. Archaeologists made an incredible discovery days before they were about to complete a dig working at a site in Vietnam. They stumbled across 11 tombs dating back to the Phung Nai Gon culture. The Phung Nai Gon remains date to around about 4,000 years ago and are best preserved of any found in this area. The tombs were discovered 1.5 metres below the ground. One of the tombs, given the designation, the Nati designation of number 9, contained the well-preserved remains of a woman aged between 35 and 40. The woman was about 1.5 metres tall and was buried face up, with her arms lying by her sides and her head tilted towards her left shoulder. Her skull was a long ovoid shape with a long nose, and her eye sockets were relatively low in her face. As was typical of the aristocracy of this culture, the woman's front teeth had been removed. Ceramic objects were found on the woman's left thigh and the left side of her hip. Archaeologists also found traces of red dust on her left knee, which is consistent with finds in other ancient tombs of this period. The Din Trang site has been excavated a total of 7 times, and during the last excavation, archaeologists discovered 11 tombs, 8 of which contained skeletons belonging mostly to children. Archaeologists stated that further research would be conducted on the tombs to uncover more about the Fong Naigan culture and the Dongson civilization, which dates back 2,000 to 3,000 years. A major exhibition is currently running at the Sainsbury Centre for Visual Arts at the University of East Anglia in Norwich. Entitled Unearthed, the exhibition brings together Japanese figurines from the Jomon period of 16,000 to 2,000 years ago, with Neolithic figurines from 8,500 to 4,000 years ago from the Balkan regions of Eastern Europe. It was hoped that by bringing together what would appear to be totally unconnected cultures in such a way, new knowledge and new insight may be gained, and visitors are actively encouraged to act as archaeologists and make their own interpretations of what they see and feel. The figurines are mixed in with contemporary artworks from both areas, some of which were inspired by the figurines. The exhibition runs from the 22nd of June to the 29th of August, and you'll be able to read all about it in the upcoming edition of Past Horizons magazine, which will be coming out right at the beginning of August. And of course, if I had to tell you, it's www.pasthorizons.com/magazine. And finally, a skeleton discovered in 2005 at a Neolithic site at Boutiers-Boulancourt, 40 miles south of Paris, has yielded rare evidence of early amputation. While trepanation is widely known to have been practiced in the Neolithic, this older man, buried some 7,000 years ago, had his arm successfully amputated above the elbow. A sharpened flint was used to cut his humerus above the trochlea indent. The cut was clean and macroscopic examination reveals no trace of infection, suggesting that it was carried out in a relatively aseptic condition. Archaeologist Cécile Bouquet-Marsan suggested that sage was probably used to clean the wound, while pain-killing plants such as the hallucinogenic datura may have been used as an anaesthetic. Although the patient suffered from osteoarthritis, he survived the operation and lived for months or even years afterwards. The loss of his arm seemed not to have prevented him from a high position in the community, as he was buried in a larger-than-average grave with a schist axe, flint pick, and the remains of a young animal. This evidence confirms that sophisticated medical knowledge and procedures existed even at this early date. However, I think I will still stick with the National Health Service. Thank you very much. So, one last time, do not forget that the latest edition of Past Horizons is coming out at the beginning of August, but of course you can have a look at all the past issues and prepare for a new and exciting Past Horizons, which will be appearing in September, at, of course, www.pasthorizons.com, where you'll find a whole load more as well. And talking about a whole load more, why not get along to Badger, either www.bajr.org or the incredible forum of Badger Federation, bajrfed.co.uk. And remember, more can always be found at Stonepages, news.stonepages.com. Well, that's enough websites for one day, and I hope to be talking to you again next week.